Has the United States been invaded? What is the legal definition of war? Can the president suspend habeas corpus? Let's tackle some headlines. From SDPB, today is Wednesday, May 14th. This is In the Moment. Coming up this hour, the president, the courts, and Congress. Our Dakota political junkies explore how the state's congressional delegation is talking about tension between branches of government. Is there reticence, statesmanship, or is it a failure to meet this moment in history? Then, the Trump administration is considering a suspension of habeas corpus. We will talk about the right to appear in front of a judge. Who has that right? And which presidents have suspended the right in the past? Are we, in fact, a nation at war? Mike Thompson is with us later in the hour. We are broadcasting today from SDPB's Kirby Family Studio in Sioux Falls. I'm Lori Walsh. You're in the moment, and news is first. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. The media landscape is constantly shifting, from the rise of digital platforms to the challenges facing local newsrooms. The way we consume and share information is transforming faster than ever. Well, we are exploring that rapidly evolving media landscape right here in South Dakota. Patrick Lally is editor of Sioux Falls Live. He stepped into SDPB's Kirby Family Studio in Sioux Falls. And we connected with the other side of the state. Brad Murdoch-Jerkinson is in the Black Hill Surgical Hospital studio in Rapid City. He runs Dakota Town Hall Podcast, and he is now executive producer of the Rapid City Post. So let's start here with a little bit about the Rapid City Post.
I think you've seen versions. I wouldn't call us journalists on the same note as Sneevy and Ellis over at the Dakota Scout, but you see, you know, the Dakota Scout and the Aberdeen Insider and pockets of local news coming back with the power of Searchlight and News Watch and you know, here out in the Rapid City market, which is not to take away from some of the great news media that's out here. It's not really against them by any means, but we certainly see a hole in the Rapid City market for like great local news.
Yeah. Would you hire staff, freelancers?
Hiring
Who's
staff.
Writing? Yeah.
We also have, community media is something I'm always talking about it. I'm super passionate about it. So defining a newspaper into community media means we get to take some of our other products and companies, and we've got almost 60 people here working it, and a lot of those are radio staff and podcasters and graphic designers, and some of those are in our event side, and we have an agri media staff already, and they're widening their scope into some full-time reporting, and then we're out hiring reporters, which is something we're embarrassed to say this on public broadcasting, I suppose, learning how to do. We're so new at this, you know.
Give me a call. I got some names for you.
Okay, it's good. I could use them. We could use all the advice we could as we start this.
So I feel like maybe no one else could have this conversation better than Patrick Lally with what you have seen happen in Sioux Falls, media disbursement and reinvention and collaborations and conglomerations,
yeah,
and catastrophes.
One of the things I would say, Brad, is don't be afraid to be critical at some measure. Like, the local media landscape has been gutted by the publicly held corporations and the hedge funds owners, and there's no shame in saying that in your case Lee Newspapers is a shell of its former self. Here it was Gannett and Aberdeen and Watertown, and the fact is that what you're doing is a response to the complete degradation of the local media landscape by people who don't care. All right, don't be afraid of that, because that's just the truth. And the reason that the Scout and Sioux Falls.business and Sioux Falls Simplified and Sioux Falls Live and all these entities exist, they are all former Argus Leader people. We are the diaspora, and it is South Dakota News Watch and South Dakota Searchlight. They are populated by the refugees of the corporate media world.
The refugees.
So don't be afraid of that, because that is your strength. That is your power, and because you have that, you have those roots, and you have that. So don't ever be ashamed of that.
I don't know if we would lay it at the feet of Lee or Gannett or one of those. We agree the local landscape has been changed, and some of it maybe, our approach might be a little more less, not that we're not trying to, just the facts, ma'am, news journalism, but, you know, we're podcasters and audio people and live event people, and so we're always in and around the community things. And so for us, I think we're in the beginning of this. It's do no harm, find your footing, and tell the truth if you can.
Patrick Lally is editor of Sioux Falls Live. Brad Murdoch-Jurgensen is executive producer with the Rapid City Post. Well, the three of us took a major detour talking about media in South Dakota, and we were going to put that full conversation up on SDPB's Dakota Political Junkies podcast. You can find that on your favorite podcasting platform. We will take a quick break, and when we come back, we are going to turn the conversation to politics. Lally and Murdoch after the break as this week's Dakota Political Junkies. You're in the moment on SDPB. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. Well, this week our Dakota Political Junkies conversation touches on national politics, South Dakota politics, and even southeastern South Dakota politics. We're going to jump from Washington, D.C. to Madison to Mitchell to Sioux Falls. Patrick Lally is editor of Sioux Falls Live, and he joined me in SDPB's Kirby Family Studio in Sioux Falls. And we connected with Murdoch over in the Black Hill Surgical Hospital studio in Rapid City, and the SDPB office is there. Murdoch is co-host of the Dakota Town Hall podcast, and his new product, the Rapid City Post, is set to interview Senator Mike Rounds. Let's start there. Let's start with, Doc, you said interview with Senator Mike Rounds. Tell me a little bit about the mood. What's the vibe, as the kids say? What's the vibe check for Senator
Rounds?
What's
the tea? Well, the vibe, yeah. I mean, the vibe check is the, you know, what's been interesting about starting a newspaper is you have to, you know, tell people that you'd like an interview. And then we're certainly learning at that level where everybody has press training and they really don't want to do the interviews oftentimes. But, you know, it was our first heel.
What?
Not heel,
what do you mean?
Digging.
Who doesn't want to do the interview?
You know,
you mean the guests or the
senators and
you trying
and,
to get
and politicians?
An interview.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah. So yeah. Just, you know, walking into this, just being candid with everybody as we're learning how to. Not that we haven't interviewed some of these people before in other formats, yeah. But we wanted he's so fond of saying grown-ups in the room. We wanted a grown-up in the room interview about what is happening in Washington D.C. that doesn't mm-hmm. come through social media or cable news.
Mm-hmm. Did you get it?
We will find out this week. You guys, this audience, we're about to do it. So you guys will find out if we're any good at this or not. Really, I'm setting the bar high. Look at this. This is so silly.
All right. Yeah. Lally, what's your opinion on how people like Senator Rounds, Representative Johnson, and Senator Thune are responding to what's happening in Washington when they talk to people here at home? Because when I talked to Senator Rounds, like one of the first things I said, you know what, because he was here for a break over, what was that, Easter? And, you know, he just said, I said, what are people asking you? And, you know, he was very frank, I thought, about how many people were contacting his office really upset about various things in general, and then also specifically how things were affecting them and how his staff was working very hard to fix things that had been broken. Maybe broken and fixed are not the right words, but how to help constituents who needed congressional support because of policies that were coming from the federal government.
I think that the current state of South Dakota politics are such that if you are a Republican, you every day is a minefield.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think... This is not to be... I'm critical of politicians plenty, and I've been covering politics for 30 years.
The heck you say.
But but I don't think that you're ever getting a real answer. And I'll say this.
Oh. You don't think you're ever getting a real answer?
No. No. Not, you're not from our congressional delegation right now.
Oh.
Because every day is a minefield, right?
What's a real answer, though?
Something that comes from a place of conscience. I don't think that's what you're getting.
You don't think that's what you're getting, or you don't think that's what anybody's getting?
I don't
getting.
Think that's what anybody's getting.
Okay.
I think the things that I hear and the things that I learn and the things that I know about these folks from knowing them for many, many years and interviewing them over many, many years, I think I know where the, I don't want to call it moral compass, but the public conscience of each of these people are, because they've all been around a long time. And I've had.
But you're not saying they're lying.
I'm not saying they're lying.
Or they're obfuscating. Is that the word?
I'm saying that they
are
navigating.
But you're saying that they're navigating.
And
well, that's not
complicated
bad.
Airflow.
I'm not saying that that is. That is not surprising, right? That you, as a public figure, would navigate the current
Paul
state.
Tenhaken?
Of things. Paul
Exception?
Tenhaken. Paul Tenhaken. He's becoming less navigating.
He's very frank.
Lately. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he's not running for anything.
Doc, he just said to you that Republicans are eating their own.
Yes.
I mean,
and
that doesn't seem like a...
he had more legislatively in common with Caden Whitman, House Rep from Sioux Falls, than he did the Republican
Party. I feel like he's dropping knowledge right now. He's saying it like it is.
He's very frustrated.
Yeah. And he says, I'm frustrated.
Yep, and he's not running for anything. So he can say that I'm very frustrated that people are demonizing Haitians. He can say, and then just
don't put a picture of the Pope. He tweeted about Donald Trump.
He said that was bad.
Sort of computer-generated, AI-generated image
of
Trump.
And let's be honest, it was really bad. And, you know, I saw Cardinal Timothy Donlan talking about it the other day. And it's bad.
So is that working for
Tenhaken?
Tenhaken?
It doesn't matter. He's not running for anything.
Does
He's
it not
done.
Matter?
He's yes. done.
Doesn't.
Yet.
If you're Dusty Johnson, you are completely up to the neck in trying to navigate a Republican primary in the state of South Dakota.
Doc, what do you think?
I think a lot of people are skating to where they want the puck to be in 28 and 32.
What a really nice analogy. I mean, what a well-formed sentence. Did you just make that up? Or is that something you drop all the time and I just haven't heard you say it yet? They're skating to where the puck wants to be.
That can't be my line. That's it's like the Michael Scott bit where I'm trying to steal it.
See, I've never heard that before.
Is it Gretzky? I think.
Is that Gretzky? Okay.
Maybe, man. I sounded smart for 10 seconds.
Cite your sources. Cite your sources.
I believe as many people that it's applicable to, whether they're in office or maybe thinking about office, are contemplating what the future will look like when it's less.
I'm a little light on sports analogies as a general rule, so it's not hard to surprise me with the sports analogy. Okay.
Forgot.
I see what you're saying.
Should have brought my chess references. I was on public broadcasting.
But, you know, I mean, if you look at Dusty, Dusty's a great example. Okay. I mean,
I love that everybody still calls him Dusty no matter what. He could be president.
Well, because
and
his last name,
like Dusty, was here.
Well, because his last name's Johnson, you know, so, you know,
I call him Congressman Johnson.
I mean, to that point, though, everyone calls Dusty Dusty still. And it's not like they're not bombastic. They're not, they don't have to be what, you know, Secretary Noem is doing in the hearings. They're known to be cautious with their answers and how they govern. And so, you know, I think that's more of the conversation.
That's statesmanship.
Yes.
So, yeah, where's the difference between, like, someone who's not running and is being very frank in the public eye, like Tenhaken, and saying things that maybe people want him to say because they reveal how he really feels. Even if you don't agree with him, people might find that refreshing, in quotation marks. But then you also have this idea of statesmanship, Patrick, that is just simply, you know, maybe these people are coming on, and it's not that they're being disingenuous or they're being, like, overly cautious because of a primary. They're just being professional and statesmanlike, and they're using the language of that is not influencer, social media, casual language. They're raising the bar for civil discourse. What about that? Yes, no?
I would say in some... So there's a difference between all three of those members of our delegation.
Mm-hmm.
Each of them plays a different role. Each of them is in a different situation. When you look at John Thune, he is walking a tightrope of the tightest measure. Everything he says is analyzed. And I think when I listen to him today, what I hear is a very neutral position on many things in terms of the way he says it, right? He is not generally critical of the president, but he is also not generally leading the charge, right? He is leading the Republican. He's leading the Senate of the United States.
I guess what I'm asking you is, are you making a value judgment about these things, or are you just saying what you're seeing?
I think everybody has to make a value judgment based on it. If you're a voter for that person, is this person's, you know, that's the danger of becoming the Senate Majority Leader, right? Is that person still speaking for me? Well, you know, it's John Thune, so I think he's on pretty solid ground, right? But I don't think the things that he says on the Senate floor are the things that he thinks about when he goes to bed at night.
Sure, but you don't think the senators and House reps during Warren Harding's time danced a little? I mean, that's not that new.
Well, I would say that I don't agree with that. I think that the Congress, the Senate, has always been a place of where ideas are brought forward and argued, and I don't think that's what's happening generally. I think the old John Thune was much more pointed in what he thought was best for South Dakota. And I'm not saying he doesn't think those things now, okay? But he is stuck in this spot. This is not a normal period of history, okay? Because I do believe that some of the fundamental things that we thought were important as a democracy and as a republic are in question, all right? Whether you think that's good or not, that's for each of you to decide. But when you are talking about restricting habeas corpus, okay, this is a serious problem, okay? If you are starting to invoke war powers.
So what do you want? Habeas corpus is a good example. Chief Justice John Roberts, openly said, the rule of law is important. It's part of what makes America America. Yep. He talked about, civics education and in school so people understand how the system works. Stephen Miller is questioning whether habeas corpus applies to some of these people that they would like to deport.
He's not questioning it.
Right, but saying it doesn't. What do you want John Thune to do? Wait for, because should he, question. Does he have a role as Senate leader and a senator representing South Dakotans to weigh in publicly? And I just came off of a couple of days off, so maybe he already did. I haven't seen it. But what is his job to do then? Because the Chief Justice of the U.S. Supreme Court has weighed in on that. Do you need John Thune to weigh in on it publicly or not?
I think there's a line at some point. And I'm not saying we're at it, but he is one of the most powerful people in the world. And if you get to a point where you feel like the rule of law, I mean, it at some measure, it doesn't matter what Chief Justice John Roberts says if they do it anyway.
Well, he would be the one.
Would he? They keep putting people on planes and shipping them off.
What do you mean?
But like, it's an intense
junkies conversation.
It is a very philosophical question, though, about the nature of law and the nature of government
the
and democracy.
The nature of law would be decided in the courts.
Would it? If the chief executive,
yes.
No.
Yes.
There's no guarantee
that
of that.
Question and say yes.
How? Why?
I guess I took
civics
so
in high school with a really great civics professor. That
what
I still
does
believe
it mean?
That place for that to be decided would be. I believe there's a place for what Congress needs to be doing, but we heard from the Chief Justice. Now we will watch it play out.
And I'm not going to judge the policy, okay, but you are seeing the executive branch in open defiance of the Supreme Court on what we may consider to be trivial things right now.
Oh, I don't think anybody considers them trivial.
Well, but people aren't
not
rising up about it.
Nobody, yeah.
Have
but
you heard,
that,
now, the, I mean, let's bring this back to John Thune. Have you heard him say, I am deeply concerned about the executive branch's defiance of the Supreme Court?
I have not heard him say that.
So
do I need to hear him say it?
And
is
maybe,
my question to you.
Well, at
do
some
we
point, there's a line.
Say it? Yeah.
There is a line.
Wow.
Where I,
and you and think,
again,
and you're arguing that we're at that line?
I'm not.
Okay.
I'm saying that when you look at the way things are constructed, you put a lot of faith in institutions.
Doc,
and in,
this is me and Lally. This is me and Lally at the bar.
Yeah,
I love it. I wish
there are no drinks here.
You're, ultimately, all the law is words. Right?
But okay, but take it back to South Dakota, right? Yeah, like yeah. In the instantaneousness of this all, and everyone's dug into positions, not saying that you are, Patrick, but a lot of, you know, the people out in the street, you know, citizens dug into prepositions. But look at what's happening at Dakota State. People are protesting Nome. Mm-hmm. We have a midterm coming up. This is, you know, we'll work this through the plumbing one way or the other, won't we?
Again, I go back to the idea. And this is when you take these things, and I'm not saying to an extreme, but if you start to play them out, well, this happened, what are their intentions? And if you have high-level people in the executive branch saying, we're going to suspend habeas corpus because we believe that we are have the right to do that because we are being invaded.
That's the question. And we can go back to this. I mean, this started very early in South Dakota. I'm not saying it started in South Dakota, but we are noticing it in South Dakota with this. It is a war zone on the southern border.
Right.
This entire argument about whether this was or was not a war zone, whether this is or is not an invasion, is something that the executive branch believes is true and is going to play out in the courts. And that's not a good thing to be living through if it is impacting you and tens of thousands of people are being impacted by this. I don't want to minimize this. I also want to say that you are watching it play out in the courts mm-hmm. in a very interesting way.
And, you know, the examples through history are and if, whether or not you believe these things are important or not, but the loss, the transfer of real power into, if not one person, into one smaller piece of government where the other co-equal branches of government are lesser, okay, that is a gradual process. And it has been happening. The role of the executive in this country has been strengthened and strengthened and strengthened and strengthened. So at what point is there a line where we are no longer what we thought we were? And we're something else. And you
or
know
there
what?
There are a thousand different lines.
There are a lot of people. There are plenty of people in China and plenty of people in Russia who are just happy with the government they got.
I want to bring it back to one thing since I said I was away for a few days. And this is just, I don't know, it has been on my mind since I came back. When I happened to be traveling the day that Donald Trump, when he was campaigning, there was the attempted assassination. Mm-hmm. And I was in the airport and I think I got a text saying, you know, have you seen the news? And so I was looking it up, and I looked around the airport. I think I was making a connection in Minneapolis. And the televisions on the bars were on. You could see the news. Nobody was watching. And I thought, well, this is weird. Don't you think people would be, like, around their television sets at the airport bars, like, watching this unfold? This is pretty significant news. I didn't see anybody. So I thought, well, they're just looking at their phones, right? So I kind of, you know, sort of, like, looking over people's shoulders to see what they were looking at. None of them were watching this news. I thought it was just such a surreal moment at the time. I happened to be on the plane when they announced the new pope, and nobody was talking about anything other than the new pope. So the seat backs of the airlines were coming on, and people were turning on, you know, CNN or whatever news, and they were like, here's Pope Bob or Pope Leo or whatever.
Red, white, and blue smoke, Lori. Come on.
Red, white, and blue smoke. I'm walking through the airport. People are around the bar talking about, why on earth would people care more about an American pope than they would have about the potential assassination of an American presidential candidate? It was a weird, I mean, there's no science behind this. This is just my singular observation of a strange,
betting lines.
Of a strange moment. But was that was strange.
I've never thought about that.
What captured the American attention about a new pope?
Betting lines.
What do you mean? Betting
you
lines.
You can bet on, you put a little money on which pope was going to, you know, the Pope Calcutta.
It was 18-1 on.
Is
on
that what, line. You are you being serious right now?
Because, yes, a little.
Oh.
Well, that, I mean, a little funny, too, but that's, you know, my MO.
It's only funny if I'm laughing.
It's fair.
I don't know that.
But, you know, you put a little cash on the Filipino pup, and then and no one had money on the American pope.
You always bet on. You throw a little bit on the American pope.
I know. I felt like a bad American for not. But
did you
put
bet?
My money on the no. good vibe. Yeah, of course, allegedly.
You, and you lost?
No. This is all just
you're a
hypothetical
man.
Bit.
I don't know.
We're
that
wrapping
is a,
up because.
That
you
is
know,
a very weird experience.
People have other things to do with their days.
We didn't even get to prisons.
You think the prison, Mitchell brought forward a good a good argument for why the state penitentiary should be moved
yeah.
to this the fine city of Mitchell.
They had a great proposal.
Give me your elevator pitch. How did Mitchell deliver?
They put a hard number in it, mm-hmm. $2.8 million. Mm-hmm. They said, we've got water, sewer, fiber optics. We're on a hard paved road. We've got all the services. We've got everything you need. Put it here. And the other proposals, well, not they were fine, but they didn't have all those elements. They didn't all have utilities. They didn't all have... They put the price negotiable. Well, come on.
Should this have happened a year ago, years ago?
Absolutely.
You should have said, what city wants this?
Yep.
Give us your...
Yep.
Why didn't it happen like that?
Because...
Or did it? I don't know.
No.
I do not know if...
Didn't it happen.
Kinda?
No.
It must have kind of... I bet if Lieutenant Governor Van Huysen here, which is here, he would say, what?
It was a different process. It wasn't this, like, send us your proposals, Mitchell. They put a much harder... Mm-hmm. border around it, and they said, we are looking for a place to go. And it was
like
always
different cities
hard.
Were vying for the capital back in the day.
Right. Yeah, it feels very historic, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, it does. Yeah. And there's I think they're having a good conversation now. The problem they're going to have is it's too short. Like, they're going to have a special session in July and like four meetings between there and come up with a plan. That's going to be pretty tough.
They could extend it.
They could.
Get that prison built in Mitchell. The Corn Palace art will be super unique.
I heard
it out to the prison chain gang.
Somebody said to me on social media, call it the corn prison. World's only corn prison. But they need Mitchell.
All right.
Mitchell deserves it. They could use it. It would be good for their community. You can't tell me that they couldn't hire people to work in Mitchell.
Patrick Lally and Brad Murdoch-Jurgensen are Dakota Political Junkies for this week. You can find this conversation and more political coverage on SDPB's podcast feed. Search for SDPB's Dakota Political Junkies. Up next, we're going to get beyond the political messaging of the tension between the executive branch and the judicial branch in America. And we're going to unpack some of the legal implications of what we're seeing from the Trump administration right now. Mike Thompson is with us. He is with University of Sioux Falls, and he's the person we always turn to when we talk about the U.S. Supreme Court. We'll get to that up next on listener-supported SDPB. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. It's a 1798 law that was somewhat obscure up until about this year. The Alien Enemies Act gives the president authority to detain, remove, and deport non-U.S. citizens, but it only applies during wartime and to non-citizens deemed enemies of the nation. President Donald Trump invoked the act this March to remove alleged members of a Venezuelan gang from the country without a hearing. His move to invoke the act has been met with resistance in the courts. Mike Thompson is an associate professor of criminal justice at the University of Sioux Falls, and he joined me in SDPB's Kirby Family Studio to help us understand that, habeas corpus, and what kind of power the courts actually have. So here is the broad argument that we hear from the White House. They're trying to enact a constitutionally protected agenda, common sense legislation, you hear this, or common sense actions that the people have sent the president into the White House to do. You hear them saying that again and again, and the courts are getting in the way. And we want to pick apart some of, and then other people are saying, hey, people are being denied due process. This, you're not doing this the right way.
Right.
So a couple things, and let's start with the 1798 Alien Enemies Act, because there's a lot of back and forth in the courts about that.
Right.
What is it?
It's an act that says that the president can essentially kick out people if there's a declaration of war or if a nation or government is essentially invading the United States.
Okay.
So Franklin Roosevelt used the act during World War II. Because there was a declaration of war, and that gave him broad powers to intern Japanese and other aliens who were here, who were part of a country that we were at war with, an actual declaration of war. That's when the executive powers are at their highest, at least in that realm.
And that decision did not age particularly well.
No. The decision, I'm sorry.
To intern Japanese-Americans
in
camps.
Well. Yeah. Even though the Supreme Court said that was okay.
Yeah.
It didn't go well.
But since then, they have said multiple times that that's not, the Supreme Court can be wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it can be. It can be. So that the Enemy Aliens Act, the main issue is whether, if we're talking about it in the context of gangs from Central America, the main factor is whether those gangs are acting on behalf of or at the direction of a nation or government. So if there was evidence that the president of Venezuela was directing this sort of paramilitary action against the United States, then the Alien Enemies Act would have more relevance. But the, as I understand it, the evidence is not that the government is directing. Number one, if these gangs are here, and if you could term that an invasion. But I don't think you can term it an invasion without first making the determination that that these people who are here because of the actions of a nation or a government. That's what the act says. They got to be part of a nation or a government.
Okay.
So gangs in general, gangs in general are not covered.
Okay, those are, they're criminals. They're,
And you can't get rid of them that
way. So this goes back to when we were talking earlier on the show about this whole language about the southern border being a war zone. And there was a lot of, again, I'm not asking you to get into the political debate of that, but what you see is the foundation of this court challenge to say, this is an invasion, this isn't a war, that, you know, we don't have a declaration of invasion, but we didn't, or declaration of war, but we didn't have a declaration of war in Vietnam, and it certainly was a war. So the executive branch is trying to make an argument, and so far the courts are pushing back on that. Because of evidence. Do I understand this broadly?
Yes.
And I took a little vacation, so I need some catching up. Help me out here.
The term war gets bandied about so much in our society that it sort of loses its legal significance. It has a legal meaning that has been around since the time of the prize cases during the Lincoln administration. And the right of a nation to prosecute, a nation prosecutes its right by force. That's a war. You have to, it's got to be a nation, it's got to be a nation-to-nation conflict for it to be a war. In the legal sense, law of war sense.
So
saying we're being invaded at the border, from a legal sense, is wrong.
It's
wrong. It's an immigration problem, and Congress, in Article 1, Section 8, has the enumerated power to address immigration. It's not the president by executive order addressing immigration, at least according to the Constitution.
All right, so we're seeing this tension back and forth. Help me understand the emergency docket again, because I was reading about Ketanji, Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson. Is that? Saying, hey, we shouldn't be doing these things in the shadows. We shouldn't be doing things in the emergency docket. What's going on? The Trump administration is asking the Supreme Court to hear things in a shorter time frame?
Just it's like if I'm about to be executed. That would be on the emergency docket. It would be something sent. It would be my petition, my court document sent to a single justice who would then distribute it amongst the other justices. There is no public argument, like in a regular writ of certiorari situation where the argument is public. There's no public argument. It's just dealt with very quickly. There's not full briefing, meaning the parties have not fully exposed their arguments in writing to the court. They haven't exposed them orally to the court. They're just saying, we got to do this. We need you to decide it now. And of course, the court has the discretion to say, no.
No.
We're not going to decide it now.
Yeah.
You don't dictate what we do.
Okay.
But they are choosing to.
She's arguing that we should stop. We should consider not accepting these emergency requests because we're not giving, and we might wander into places where we're making mistakes.
Well, and the,
our decisions don't age well.
Right. And the courts have long recognized that the press and people have the right to attend court. It's a public place unless a judge closes the proceedings for some reason. And here there's no, all we get from the court is what they issue. There's no indication generally of why or anything where we can, where we, the public, could check what the court's doing.
Yeah. So part of this, I guess I want to ask you too, you know, the courts are slow.
Yes, they are.
And we live in an time frame where we expect the next tweet to, you know, give us the update? You know, how often do people refresh their phones to get the latest news or check in to see if something has happened? Is part of what is happening just a pressure for a more instant gratification society?
Oh, that I don't know the answer to that.
Okay.
But litigation is very slow. Very slow. And decisions the Supreme Court makes on the record, not on the emergency docket, those are arrived at very meticulously. And that's just the nature of the law. You're making rules not only to govern a case, but that are also most of the time precedential, that are to guide further conflict.
So
it takes a while. It takes a while. And it could be. It could be, hey, I need to get this done today. And that the courts don't work that way.
Yeah.
Or not designed to, I guess.
So this idea of the Alien Enemies Act, what happens next with us? Is there anything that you're watching that you're particularly curious? Because there's more than one case where they're trying to figure out exactly what is going to happen next with governmental actions.
Right. The thing I'm watching is what sort of due process these people are going to receive, these deportees. Because the U.S. Supreme Court has said, you got to give them some due process.
You have to notify them that they're going to be deported. You have to give them a chance to show up and argue against it.
Yep, due process requires notice and a meaningful opportunity to be heard.
What's that mean, legally, meaningful?
That means a chance to contest the evidence against them. It can't just be a non-law-trained judge, so to speak. It's got to be meaningful. I have to be able to get my full say in, essentially. So that I'm looking for that. The Alien Enemies Act, there are a few sections of it. One of the sections actually talks about the judicial role in the deportation or the exclusion of the alien, which is not talked about that I can see. And it's interesting that the judicial branch is mentioned in there. So the Supreme Court, we're going to be watching what kind of process these people get. And it reminds me of the Bush era cases after 9/11, Razul versus Bush, where the court said that the failure to provide a person who is labeled as an enemy combatant, the failure to provide them a chance to contest that classification amounted to a suspension of the writ of habeas corpus. And that was unlawful. You could not do that. You had to give them a right to be heard. So that's what I'm going to be looking at. But we have I was going to say curious or interesting, but it's also scary. We have the scary problem of an executive branch that is not abiding by the order, but abiding by the Supreme Court's order, which is troubling.
What happens next there?
That's a great question. I've thought about what's a district court, the trial court level judge in the federal system. You issue an order saying you need to return so-and-so from this country because they were wrongfully excluded or taken away, and the executive branch does nothing. I don't know what you do. Would you hold the president in contempt and throw him in jail until the contempt is purged? I don't know what you do.
Yeah.
And I think the courts are struggling with that, too. What's our remedy?
Yeah.
Because normally you say, I'm going to hold you in contempt unless most people say, you know, I don't want to be jailed forever, you know, because on a contempt, there's no end. It's you either purge the contempt and get out, or you sit for as long as we think is appropriate.
Purge the contempt means do what they say?
Yeah. Excellent.
Okay.
Yep.
All right.
Yeah.
So you mentioned habeas corpus, and Stephen Miller, one of President Trump's top aides, said over the weekend that they were actively looking at suspending habeas corpus, and that it would, quote, depend on whether the courts do the right thing or not. What is going on?
Right.
Okay, so habeas corpus means?
Means free the body or bring the body.
Okay.
Habeas corpus is a remedy. Well, if I'm being held by the government, habeas corpus says that I get to petition a court for the court to order, bring me to court, so to give the government the chance to say that my incarceration is constitutional. The government's got to prove that they're holding me constitutionally. So, and that writ has been around since before the United States was formed. It came from England. So that's what it's for. It would be a situation where if I was about to be deported and I'm being held in a prison, mm-hmm. awaiting deportation, and if you suspended the writ, I couldn't apply to test the constitutionality of my holding, the constitutionality of the place in which I'm being held. There's no court supervision over that.
Is there precedent for that, suspending the writ?
Well, in the Civil War, Lincoln suspended the writ. Lincoln, as the executive branch, suspended the writ. And then there was a whole... he suspended it. There was a case called Ex Parte Merriman, where Lincoln went in and arrested a person from Baltimore, and Merriman challenged the president's power to suspend the writ. Justice Taney, who was the Chief Justice of the U.S. Supreme Court at the time, and who also wrote Dred Scott and other cases, he was Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. The case, the Merriman habeas, was presented to him when he was sitting as a judge on a federal circuit bench. Sort of a complicated, where does a judge go kind of thing. But the Supreme Court justices now cover different circuits. Okay. So he was covering that circuit. He heard the case. He ruled that he ruled by himself. There wasn't the full court didn't rule this. He ruled that Lincoln could not suspend the writ. That was unconstitutional. The main reason is that the writ of habeas corpus clause is in Article 1, Section 9, which is a legislative article, indicating that, well, it must be there because Congress is the only body that has the right to suspend it.
Oh.
The other side of that is that when the Constitution was being framed, it was the Committee on Style that put the habeas clause there. There was no earnest substantive debate on where the habeas clause should go or who has the right to suspend it. The Committee on Style said, let's put it here. So there's really, and the Supreme Court's never answered the question, who can suspend it. In Lincoln's case.
So Lincoln tried and failed.
No, he did. He got it suspended, and it kept being suspended, but there was an outcry that only Congress had the right to suspend. So Congress came in with the Habeas Corpus Act of 1863 and said, yeah, it's suspended.
Oh,
so Congress
okay.
then Congress then.
So in theory, if I think about today, Stephen Miller says we're looking at doing this. The executive branch does it, and then Congress, it would go through the courts, and then Congress would, in theory, be able to, or maybe be encouraged to act.
Yeah.
And then they would suspend it or not.
Sure. Yep. Congress could ratify that decision.
Okay.
Just like it did in Lincoln's time, Congress could ratify it. The only other time the court has found us, well, in recent times where the court has found a suspension is in the 9/11 era with the congressional statutes of the time that failed to provide for this hearing. The court ruled that that amounted to a suspension of the writ and the circumstances.
Wait,
weren't.
Say that again. I didn't get that. What do you mean? Okay. What amounted to the suspension?
Oh, the statutory. So Congress passed a number of statutes regarding enemy combatants after 9/11. Congress in those statutes did not give the right to a hearing to contest status as a combatant. The Supreme Court said that that failure, that congressional failure, amounted to a suspension of the writ of habeas corpus, meaning without the chance to contest my classification, you've taken away my chance at a writ of habeas corpus. So Congress had to go back and redraft the statute, so it wasn't a suspension.
Okay.
So in that case, you had Congress actually doing the legislation that amounted to a suspension, so there was no question about who has the right to suspend.
Yeah.
So.
But they had to go back and not do it?
Yeah. Congress had to go back and fix it so it wouldn't be a suspension of the writ of
habeas. But I thought it was Congress who could do it.
Well, Congress can. The president
so
can.
Why did they go back and why
well,
did they
well, no. Oh, excellent. Sorry. Excellent question. There was no cause to suspend the writ.
Okay. And who determined there was no cause?
the court.
Here we go.
Yeah. Yeah.
We landed at home base.
Right. Right. Yeah, we did. Yeah. So the writ can be suspended only in times of rebellion.
All right. So much depends on how you see what's happening.
You're right.
Which is hard from the city of Sioux Falls to look out and say, well, what happened in Venezuela or what's happening where these people are landing or whether or not they're even gang members.
Right.
Because many of them are saying that they're not.
Right.
And so if you come to court, if you're taken and you're being removed from the U.S. because you are an alleged gang member and you get your day in front of the judge, is who has to provide the evidence that you're a gang member? Do you have to prove that you're not? The government has to prove that you are.
Yep.
You should be able to come and say, in other words, are they innocent until proven guilty? Do you need evidence that they're part of a gang if they're not U.S. citizens?
You need evidence that that person is here on behalf of a government or a nation.
Okay. Which seems tough to pull together.
I would think so.
A tattoo isn't going to do it.
You know, it's hard to say today, but no, a tattoo should not do it. No, a tattoo should not do it. Just because I have an Odin tattoo doesn't mean I'm a pagan and you can eradicate me from the Catholic Church. I'm being facetious, but tattoos aren't legal evidence.
So what's going on? And what happens next? Do you have a crystal ball for how some of this stuff is going to play out? Because it just seems from a political standpoint that this is just a push and pull between the executive and the judicial branch. We're not really sure how different judges are ruling in different ways, but we don't know how these things are going to be moved through the court system and up to the Supreme Court, for example. What does it look like from your legal perspective?
Congress has to show up. Congress has got to show up. They're letting colleges get defunded. They're letting administrative agencies just get eradicated. Congress needs to. That's their role. The courts, the founders said courts are going to be your weakest branch. They don't have the sword. They don't have the purse. They can't fund themselves, and they can't enforce their orders. So the courts can do all they want, but without an executive branch to enforce those orders, they're just held in. They're held in limbo, and I think if you think back to all the powers of the presidency have just grown since FDR's time. I think, they're going to continue to grow unless Congress, I think, does something. I'm not a political scientist, but from a legal standpoint, the Constitution says, Congress, you're where it's at. You guide these other branches. And war is a perfect example. The president can't wage a war. The president can wage a war after Congress says, yeah, you can go ahead, because Congress funds it and declares it and those types of things. President Trump is still working on, so when he's talking about the Houthis and I'm engaging them with billions of dollars in munitions, he's still working under the authorization for use of military force that Congress did back and on 9/11.
Oh.
Yeah, so that's why he can go kill people on their porches in Iraq, because of the authorization for the use of military force. And he doesn't have to report to Congress. So there are several legal doctrines at play. And from a esoteric or intellectual standpoint, it's really kind of like being in the playground. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff going on, and the Constitution is sort of writhing around in it. But from a practical person in America standpoint, it is a bit frightening.
Mike Thompson is an associate professor of criminal justice at the University of Sioux Falls. And that is our show for today. We hope that it served you. In the Moment is produced by Ari Youngeman and Ellen Kester. I'm your host, Lori Walsh. Our executive producer is Kara Hetland. From all of us here at SCPB, thanks for listening.